Good afternoon, everyone, or good evening, or good night, or good morning. I'm not sure where everyone is who's listening to this. And I'm sort of new on anything that's technology, so but I hope this works. We're going to try it. But as the sign said in school last week, that this week's Shir Klali was going to be about various aspects of Bedikas Chametz and Mechiras Chametz, so we're going to try now and have Shir Klali on some of those issues. So let's go ahead. The Torah tells us that there is an Iser of Lo Yera'eh Lecha Chametz V'lo Chametz Lo Yimatzei B'vateichem, that there's an Iser of Bal Yera'eh and Bal Yimatzei, Bal spelled Bet Lamed, that a person is not allowed to have to any Chametz under his ownership anywhere in his property. And in order to avoid violating this Iser Doraita, there are at least three solutions that one may make use of to make sure that one doesn't violate Bal Yera'eh Bal Yimatzeh. The first solution is to simply remove all the chametz from your property. And that's done in two stages. First of all, you have to find the chametz. And second of all, you go ahead and destroy it. So let's begin. There is a chiv derabanan of bedikas chametz. A person has to go and check in his property to make sure that there is no chametz in his property. When is bedika done? The preferable time for bedikah to take place is the night before Pesach, on Leil Yudalid Nisan. So if Pesach in about 3 weeks is going to be on Wednesday night, then the night for doing bedikah is on Tuesday night. The time for bedikah begins at Tzeis HaKochavim, at nightfall. In general, most people are home in the evening, and a candlelight or other substitutes for candlelight, as we'll see, is more effective when it's generally speaking dark. Where do you have to go searching for chametz? So the halacha is that you have to go searching for chametz anywhere in your property that during the year you might have brought in chametz, which includes all different areas, not only in the, you would think in the kitchen, but in all rooms of the house. People carry around food. You have to check the crevices of a sofa, of a couch. You have to check a knapsack. You might have taken on a tiyul. You have to check your winter coat pockets. You may have put in a half a candy bar there. Basically, in so many different places, in drawers, on the floor, behind things, check to make sure that there is no chametz. You also have to check out your car. Generally speaking, people tend to eat in their car. Sometimes when you have little kids, your car can look like a messy grocery store by the time they finish eating. And the car has to be cleaned out very well and vacuumed very well to make sure that there is no chametz in the car. Rav Lichtenstein used to tell a story. I don't remember the exact details, but I don't know whose car it was. His car was in Boston, some car connected to Rav Soloveitchik, but in any event, it was Chol HaMoed Pesach, and they were in the car, and they opened up the glove compartment, and it turns out that somebody who had supposed to have checked the car missed the place, and inside the glove compartment, he said, Matzanu Drake's Cakes, Devil Dog Ani Choshev, some type of Drake's Cakes at the time. So you have to check all over. I remember fairly well that it was many, many years ago. I was living in Brooklyn, and I had cleaned out my car very, very well. And it was the morning Erev Pesach, and I went to shul, and I came out of shul, and it was a very cold, blustery day, and the front windshield was all fogged up. So I turned on the car, and I put on the defroster for the front windshield full blast, when all of a sudden pieces of cookie started flying all over the car. And I didn't know what was going on. I see pieces of cookie flying all over. And it took me a moment to recuperate, to realize that my children, they should live and be well. I guess one day when they were bored and they were in the car, and maybe I wasn't in the car at that moment, and they took pieces of cookie and had stuck them into the vents by the front windshield. So I didn't see them when I was cleaning the car, but when I turned on the defroster full blast, it blew the pieces of cookie out of the vents and into the car. So luckily it was before Pesach and I was to clean it up. But for years afterwards, whenever I cleaned the car before Pesach, I would always turn on my defroster full blast just to make sure that the children hadn't found a nice depository for the cookies there once more. Now, there is a custom when you're doing bedikah the night before Pesach to put out pieces of bread in your various places in the house. Some have a minhag of putting out 10 small pieces of bread. The idea behind this is that there is an opinion, which we don't paskin like lahalacha, but there is an opinion out there that if I go searching for chametz and I don't find any chametz, that the bracha that I recited on destroying the chametz will not be applicable, could retroactively be a bracha levatala. We don't paskin that way, but in order to accommodate that that opinion, the minority opinion, so there is a custom of putting out pieces of bread. One should be very, very careful in putting out pieces of bread that one doesn't forget where you put the pieces of bread, because if you put out 10 pieces of bread and you found only 9, you have to start searching your entire house all over again. So make sure that you don't forget where the pieces are. Make sure that you put them places where you'll find them. Make sure that it doesn't create more crumbs. People sometimes wrap them up in a little bit to make sure it doesn't create more crumbs. And as we'll see a little bit later, that it's very important. You don't have to put out 10 full slices of bread. In fact, I think it's a very bad idea to put out 10 full slices of bread, and we'll see why a little bit later. Before one begins the bedikah, one recites the bracha, Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam, Asher Kedushanu B'mitzvosav V'tzivanu Al Bi'ur Chametz. That's the bracha that's recited. It's a somewhat unique bracha. It's a bracha that's recited only once a year. Most brachos that exist are recited more than once a year. This is one of the few brachos that are recited only once a year. If you can come up with the others and want to let me know, I'd be happy to hear from you. I'm always happy to hear from you. But you can figure out which are the other brachos that are recited only once a year. Now, the halacha is that one should check lo'or haner. You shouldn't check in the dark. You could check lo'or haner. You should use a candlelight. The 20th century poskim were asked about using a flashlight instead of a candle or in addition to a candle, and many, many poskim permit using a flashlight. In fact, there's some who prefer. Very often in a person is a little bit wary, and correctly so, of bringing a candle to look inside a closet or underneath beds, somewhere where chas v'shalom there could be a fire, and one has to be extremely, extremely careful. Unfortunately, there have been cases where fires have been set by people using candles. My personal custom that I do, I don't know if you don't have to adopt it, is when I start off doing bedikah, so since the minhag is to do with the candles, I do bedikah for about 30 seconds with a candle, and then afterwards I switch over to a flashlight, and I put out the candle. I don't use the candle. I think it's much more effective to use the flashlight, and I think that does a better job of bedikah. A number of poskim, both through Moshe Feinstein, Shlomo Zalman Orbach, said it's not necessary to shut off the overhead lights in your room. You don't have to just have a candle or just have a flashlight. You can keep the lights on. Flashlights certainly are still very effective in checking under beds and closets, inside closets, and the bedikah can proceed that way. Preferably, one should not talk at all from the time one makes the bracha on Al Bi'ur Chametz at the beginning of the bedikah until one completes the entire bedikah, because the entire bedikah should be included in the bracha, and therefore one should be careful not to talk, or at least not to talk about things that are not connected to the mitzvah of bedikas chametz. Now, how do you check chametz? So there are people who will go from one corner of the house to another corner of the house and check every single last corner of the house, something that can take hours and hours and hours and hours, maybe all night long. What is suggested is that given our propensity, our custom to clean up the houses very, very well, way in advance of the night of the 14th of Nisan, and our houses are hopefully chametz free before then, so one doesn't have to recheck and check every single nook and cranny, every single little corner of the house all over again. But what I do is I walk into each of the rooms of the house, and I first look around to see where there might be places that chametz may have not gotten into. you know, check underneath the bed that chametz got into. Excuse me, it may have not been removed. Make sure to move a bed from the wall or check behind the dresser if it's movable, to go see if that's there. Give another look and at least a mental checklist. Did I go through these drawers or did someone else responsible in the house go through the drawers? You're checking other people's rooms and you can say, did you check out all the drawers? Did you take out the drawers to make sure that this was taken care of? You go into the closet and you re-examine. Are there any coats here? Did the coat pockets get checked? Did the there's a knapsack lying in the closet. Did that get checked? And to therefore, as you go through, checking to make sure that every place that possibly got chametz had been already been checked and clean. And if not, to go ahead and check that. And if so, after a few minutes of just making sure that all the places that needed to be checked have already been checked and are chametz free, then one can go on to the next room. The bedikah is not meant to just find the 10 pieces of bread that you left out. It's not meant to be like a 60-second or a two-minute thing. I found piece one, piece two, piece three, whee, got it all, and we're out of there. No, you really have to do a checking. But, again, it's not necessary to start checking every single last square inch of your house all over again. That is something that can take many, many hours. And this way that you re-examine the rooms and to make sure that everything that needed to be checked had been checked. And if not, do it then. Once the chametz is gathered together, that's only half the problem. I still have now, instead of chametz in a dozen different places in my house, now I have chametz in one place in my house. I gathered it all together. So now that it's gathered all together, what do? I set it aside, put it in a safe place where no one or no animal is going to get to, wrap it up very well. And the next morning, the morning of Erev Pesach, one has to destroy the chametz. That's called bir chametz. And the preferable way of destroying the chametz is through burning, is through sreifa. Again, one has to be very, very careful about fires. Not only that fires shouldn't spread, but sometimes there are people who use lighter fluid, and I've heard stories, horrible stories, of the lighter fluid that got a little bit loose and spritzed on a person, and all of a sudden on a person's clothes, and all of a sudden the clothes caught fire. You have to be extremely, extremely careful. And there are a lot of neighborhoods where the fire department has arranged for proper supervised bir chametz, and one should make use of that so that things are done in a supervised way, and chas v'shalom, there aren't any tragedies, rachman al-Itzlan, that can happen because people weren't careful with the sreifas chametz. Now, the object, of course, is that the chametz should burn very, very well. It's no longer roi l'achilas kelev. And you sometimes see people coming with almost like a week's worth of groceries that they have found in the house, and they want to dump the whole thing in this tiny little fire. It almost smothers the fire, and the chametz does not get burned well. I have, on many occasions, unfortunately, passed by places where there was sreifas chametz the day before, and you come there on the first day of Pesach, walking by, and you can see still half a piece of bread that was hardly burnt at all, and because it was just too much. And that's why when I said earlier, if you put out pieces of bread, don't put out 10 slices of bread. I try to keep to a minimum how much chametz I end up burning. Again, you can find things unexpectedly, and then, of course, you have to go ahead and burn it. But if everything is taken care of, and there's not much more to take, you know, one slice of bread and break it up into small little pieces, so that hopefully in any kind of a half-decent fire, those small pieces will burn up very well. And this way, you can make sure to be mekayem bir chametz properly. If one cannot check one's house on the night before Pesach on Leil Yudalit, then there are a couple of possibilities. One is if you have somebody who can check it for you and appoint a shaliach on your behalf, and let that person check your property on the night of the 14th. If no one is going to be home, and it's not practical necessarily to have a shaliach, then you go do bedikas chametz the last night, as long as it's within 30 days of Pesach, the last night that you're in your house, your apartment, wherever you're living, the last night that you're there before Pesach is when you do bedikah. But if it's not on the night of the 14th of Pesach, there are a couple of changes that take place. Number one is we do not recite the bracha prior to the bedika, because the bracha is recited only when it's being done on the night of the 14th, not if it's being done earlier. And second of all, since we're not reciting a bracha, there's no need to put out pieces of bread. So one needs to just properly check one's property to make sure that there is no chametz that's there. So that is one method of making sure that we don't violate Bal Yerah and Bal Yimatzeh, the combination of bedika and beer, and destroying the chametz. Now, there is a second method that one can engage in order to prevent one from violating Bal Yerah or Bal Yimatzeh. The second method that one does is called bitul chametz, where a person goes ahead and is mevatel the chametz, basically annuls the chametz. And what he does is say, and he has to mean what he says, that any chametz that is in my property, I am making null and void, as if it was like the dust of the earth, libatel v'lehevei hefker ka'afra da'ara. And in that case, I've removed my ownership over the chametz. The chametz is now not mine, it's ownerless, and I would not violate Bal Yerah Bal Yimatzeh, because I'm only violating it if there's chametz, if there is chametz that belongs to me on my property. If the chametz doesn't belong to me, it belongs to somebody else. Some worker comes to my house and on Chol HaMoed, and in his bag he's carrying a piece of bread. He happens to be sitting in my house, but I don't violate Bal Yerah Bal Yimatzeh. It's his bread, not my bread. So here I make everything ownerless, and I am mevatel my chametz. Nevertheless, Chazal said that one should not rely just on bedika, nor should one rely just on bitul, but one should do both of them. Why don't we rely just on bedika? Because, as I said before, sometimes people do, hopefully, a good bedika, but even if they planned on doing a good bedika, sometimes you miss things. And therefore, there'll be chametz in your property that you didn't notice, you forgot to check in a certain place, and you would be violating Bal Yerah if all you did was relying on the bedika. In addition, we're worried that if you only did, and therefore, one has to go ahead and make sure to do bitul in addition to the bedika. And this way, if something was left behind that you missed during the bedika, it still would not cause you to violate Bal Yerah Bal Yimatzeh because you did bitul. Why don't we rely just on bitul? Why do we have to bother doing bedika? Because sometimes people, even though they claim that they're mevatel everything and it's ownerless and they couldn't care less about it, but sometimes it might be some very valuable food, chametz, that you're not so thrilled about giving up your ownership. So even though you said it, you may not have had proper kavana to be mevatel it properly. In addition, imagine somebody just was mevatel all the chametz in his house and never did any bedika, never did any cleanup. And so he's going to see a box of cookies lying around on Pesach. And without thinking twice, he's going to say, cookies, I'll make the right bracha. I'll say, boy, my name is Zonos, and start eating the cookie on Pesach because he left it lying around. So therefore, we want to get rid of all the chametz in our homes. And therefore, we do first bedika and beer, and then we do bitul. Now, the bitul really is done in two different time frames. The first time we do bitul is when we finish doing the bedika on the night before Pesach, or even earlier, when we finish doing the bedika schametz, one recites the proper nusach of bitul, kol chamira v'chamira de'ika b'shusi. You can find it in Sidurim in Machzorim, and if you don't understand what you're saying, you should take a look and read it in translation. That will help you understand. It's very important to know what you're saying, that your chametz is considered null and void, and as if it's hefker, like the dust of the earth. We do it once at night after we finish the bedika, and once during the day at the time when we're doing the sreifas chametz, we're doing the beer chametz. The reason we do it twice is the first time we do it because we want to, we're mevatel, and only the chametz that we don't know about. There's chametz that I do know about. I put aside chametz that I'm planning to burn. That's my chametz. I left aside chametz for breakfast. Some people have a chametz stick breakfast on the Erev Pesach early in the morning. So that chametz I'm not mevatel. So I'm saying I'm only mevatel the chametz that I don't know about. That's that which I hopefully would have come across when I did Bedika, but I didn't see it. So if I don't know, that's when I'm mevatel. And we do it again on the at the time of Biur, and then we're mevatel all the chametz that is in our property, whether we know about it, we don't know about it, we saw it, we don't saw it. This is the last few minutes before the Yisur of Bal Yirah and Bal Yimatzi would take place, and therefore I mevatel all the chametz. And we have a backup, so in case we forgot to do it during the day, we already did it at night, so at least the mevatel all the chametz that I didn't know about. But we don't rely only on the one at night, we also do it again during the day. So that's the second method of getting rid of the chametz. The third method that has been instituted to get rid, to make sure that you don't violate Bal Yirah, Bal Yimatzeh, is that a person sells his chametz, what's called mechirat chametz. So there is this third method of, I just paused to take a drink of water, but I wasn't going to say the shahakal. You wouldn't be able to answer amen on a recorded shahakal. The third method is that we have to make sure we don't violate Bal Yirah, Bal Yimatzeh, is Mechirat Chametz. Now, the time of Chazal, they used to do Mechiras Chametz, but it was a very straightforward Mechira. I would gather all the Chametz that I had in my house, and I would find a non-Jew who was willing to buy it, and I would give it to him. He would pay me whatever price we agreed on, and I would never see that Chametz again. And he would take it. So that would be an easy way to just get rid of all my chametz. But during the Middle Ages, things became a little bit more difficult, whether it's partially because Jews owned taverns and they included a lot of whiskey, which was chametz, and how exactly they're supposed to do this. They can't to sell the tavern. How are they going to get a fair price? There wouldn't be somebody who's willing to pay that much money. And therefore, a system was developed of doing mechiras chametz, which was legal and would solve the problem of not being violating Bal Yirah or Bal Yimatzeh, but would not involve my taking all of my chametz in my possession, finding a non-Jew, agreeing on a price, he pays me all the money in cash, and I give it to him and never to see it again. So what happens? There is a way that halachically I could sell all my chametz to a non-Jew, and even though it would remain in my house, the location where it actually is would be temporarily be given over to the non-Jew, and he would halachically own all my chametz, and therefore I'm not violating Bal Yirah or Bal Yimatzeh because it's not my chametz. The chametz belongs to a non-Jew. How to do this properly is extremely complicated, and therefore we don't do it on our own. What we do is we ask a learned Rav to act as our agent in our behalf and have him sell my chametz to the non-Jew. We don't sell our chametz to the rabbi. The rabbi isn't buying our chametz. What we do is we appoint the Rav to be an agent to take care of Mechimas chametz. And even though almost all Rabbanim of shuls are involved in the Mechiras chametz, what often happens is that a number of Rabbanim, especially they're very fine Rabbanim, but they don't have that mastery of the halachas of Mechiras chametz, would all gather together from within the neighborhood, and then one of the bigger Talmidei Chachamim would then work on all together, taking from all the different shuls and all the different neighborhoods, that the big Talmud Chacham would come along and would arrange the Mechira together with the non-Jew, and that's the way that we would carry out the Mechiras Chametz. So what one needs to do is to make sure to, in plenty of time before Erev Pesach, to appoint the Rav to act as your agent to sell the chametz. Different Rabbanim require different things. Obviously, everybody wants to know your name and address. Some want to know specifically where in your house the chametz is being kept. Some ask to know the details of what type of chametz it is. Some people ask to know approximately the value of the chametz. Some want to know where exactly who has access in case you're going away. So in case the guy wants to come and get the get his chametz, who he can speak to. And there are different things depending on whatever criteria your Rav wants. Obviously, that's what you would be doing. There is a machloket aposkim. If I on Pesach am going to be in one time zone and my chametz is located in another time zone, when does the Isur Bal Yerah Bal Yematzah begin? Where my chametz is or where I am? So, for instance, if there is somebody who has chametz in Eretz Yisrael and that person is in, let's say, New York, so there's approximately a 7-hour time difference between the time that the Isur of Bal Yerah takes place in Eretz Yisrael and 7 hours later it takes place in New York. You can't sell the chametz after the Isur Bal Yerah Bal Yematzah begins. It has to be beforehand. So if it depends on when the on where the person is, so a Rav in New York can handle the sale of the chametz for the person in New York, if the chametz, even though the chametz is in Eretz Yisrael. But if it depends where the chametz is located, the Rav in New York, by the time the Rav in New York is selling the chametz, it's already Pesach in Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, you have to make sure that either he's going to do a sale the day before, and some Rabbanim do a sale once the day before for these kinds of situations, and once on Erev Pesach, or you make sure that there's a Rav in Eretz Yisrael who's taking care of selling your chametz, because we pass in the chumra in both directions. We whichever is more problematic, that we have to be choshish to. In terms of buying back the chametz, that's usually less of a problem. No one can force me to buy back something against my will, and therefore, if I am in a, so to speak, later time zone, even though it's already been bought back in the earlier time zone, it's not going to be a problem because I'm not going to take ownership of it because I don't want to take ownership of it before Pesach is over for me. So these are the three methods of making sure that we don't violate Bal Yerah, Bal Yematzeh. There's Bedika and Biyur, there's Bitol, and there is Mechira. I think it's important to talk about a few other issues that come up regarding chametz. Obviously, we want to talk about all the issues regarding chametz. Not only would we require more than one shiur klali, we would require probably dozens of shiur klali to try to cover all the issues. The issur of chametz applies not only to eating chametz, but also applies to benefiting from chametz. And therefore, one has to be careful about using chametz products that may not be food, but they may contain chametz. On the other hand, if there is chametz which is in a situation of not being ro'i l'achilas kelev, not being something that even not even fit for animal consumption, then in general we don't have to worry about its status as chametz, unless of course I tend to give it an important status. There are differences of opinion amongst the poskim of various what things require to make sure that they are chametz free and which items do not require that they be chametz free. I would usually give out two handouts, one from the OU and one from the CRC in Chicago, which are not identical but very closely in sync with each other as to what requires one makes sure that there's no that they are chametz free, and which items one doesn't have to worry about them being chametz free. You can take a look; it's available online, both from the OU website and from the CRC in Chicago website. Various things. There are definitely opinions that are more machmir about certain issues, and you're welcome to check with your own Rav about what to do. But obviously, these are two very, very reliable kashrut organizations, both the OU and the CRC. And if one wishes to, one can certainly rely on what they suggest. There's a whole discussion regarding medication. And again, I urge you to read what it says. There is a bit of a consensus that non-chewable pills are generally not a problem for medications. Creams also. If something is chewable, that's already, or liquids, that's already something that you have to look into a little bit more. Again, I urge you to take a look for the details on one of these two websites, or check with your local Rav about what should be done. There are definitely poskim who suggest that anything that I might actually swallow, like mouthwash or toothpaste or flavored lip treatment, might require shkacha to make sure that it is chametz free. So please take a look again at these lists, and you'll be able to have guidance as to what needs special kosher Pesach supervision and what doesn't need special kosher Pesach supervision. The issue of kidney out is something that has been an issue in the Ashkenazi community for many, many centuries. It is one of the most binding, that's the right word, minhagim on the Ashkenazi community. And the later poskim talk very, very strongly about how one needs to follow the rules of kidney out. There are some people out there who want to try to abolish this minhag amongst the Ashkenazim. I don't think that there is any serious support from Gedolei Yisrael at all towards that, and Ashkenazim have to be very, very careful about the minhag of not eating kidney out. Now, the reason behind the issur of kidney out, the minhag of kidney out, that of not eating kidney out, that Ashkenazim accepted, is that one reason given is that sometimes one cannot distinguish between, let's say, corn flour and wheat flour. And if I make something out of corn flour, somebody might think that you can make something out of wheat flour, or that often with the kidney oat grains were mixed in grains from the wheat, barley, rye oats, and spelt, which can actually become chametz. And therefore, there was this minhag. There is a minhag, that very, very strong minhag, that developed over many, many centuries, that Ashkenazim don't eat kidney oat. That's true, by the way, not only of Ashkenazim, but they're even Sephardim, I think, Moroccans don't eat rice on Pesach. So there are other, this has become more widespread, past beyond the Ashkenazi community. The issue of kidney out is only regarding eating. There is no issue to benefit from kidney out, and there is no issue to keep kidney out in your house. Although if you have a can of kidney out corn, in theory, you don't have to, let's say, sell it to a goy or get rid of it. On the other hand, if you leave it lying around the house and you don't put it away, you might come to accidentally eat the corn. Or you have to also make sure that there are no ingredients in whatever can you have that might actually be chametz ingredients, if it doesn't say that it's kosher lePesach le'ochel kidney out. Here in Eretz Yisrael, there is that hechsher for many, many Sfardim. It says kosher lePesach le'ochel kidney out bulvad. Obviously, only people who eat kidney out on Pesach should use that, not people who don't eat kidney out. The minhag is to be machmir not only with kidney out in a solid form, but we don't use shemen kidney out, like corn oil. There is a ongoing debate amongst the poskim what exactly is included in kidney out and not. Kinwa was one of the latest issues that came up over the last decade or so, and the Ashkenazi poskim are split on the issue: should be treated as kidney out or not treated as kidney out. You can check with your local rav what the custom in your community is, or what you should be doing. There's been a discussion for many, many years about peanut oil. What's the story with shemen kutna from cottonseed oil? And again, there are many very reliable achsherim that give hashkachos on cottonseed oil, on peanut oil. But again, there are different customs in different communities. One of the issues that is very important is if a Ashkenazi is going to be eating on Pesach by a member of the Idot Mizrach, a Sfardi, who, for him, Sfardi is allowed to eat kidney out, but we're not allowed to eat kidney out. So you have to be very, very careful. First of all, what's clear is that just because you're eating in the house of a Sephardi, it doesn't mean you're allowed to start eating kidney out of your Ashkenazi. So he may be serving rice, but you can't eat the rice on Pesach. So that's absolutely clear. The question that poskim deal with is what happens if somebody, if a Sephardi cooked rice in a pot, cleaned out the pot, and And a few minutes later, started cooking some vegetables, some other vegetables that Ashkenazim can eat. So do we say that since the pot was used for kidneys, that an Ashkenazi can't use it? So if the pot hadn't been used in 24 hours for kidney out before they started cooking food for the Ashkenazi, then it seems to be clear that there isn't a problem and you can eat that food. If the pot had been used within the last 24 hours for kidney out, so poskim are a little bit more hesitant about this, but b'di'eved, especially b'shat hadchak, or if there's a need, there is room to be mekel. There is a lot more that one can talk about regarding Chametz and Pesach, as I said earlier on, but this is at least the beginnings of certain halachos. Obviously, if you have any questions, you can contact any of the Rabbanim from MMY or contact your local Rabbanim to find out more. And just want to take this opportunity to wish everyone a Chag Kosher Sameach. We should all, Bezrat Hashem, stay healthy. And just like disaster can strike very, very suddenly, as we've seen, Yeshua Hashem Kerefayin, and Bezrat Hashem, even this year, we should be Zocha Lecho Min Azvachim Min Apsachim, that we should be Zochet Liros B'Vinyan Beis HaMikdash B'Bias Mashiach Tzidkenu B'Meir V'Yameinu. Amen.